shall not cease from exploration, and the end of all our exploring will be to arrive where we started and to know the place for the first time. T.S. Eliot. My name is Troy Klein, and welcome to another Sun Earth Day Highlights podcast. In this special edition, our team headed to the northernmost town in the United States, Barrow, Alaska, where we joined in on a celebration of the polar sunrise. So what makes this particular sunrise so special? Well, Barrow is located over 300 miles north of the Arctic Circle, and as a result, it doesn't see a sunrise for 84 days of the year. Imagine not seeing the sun for 84 days. So when it does peak over the southern horizon on January 23rd, it's something to shout about. To mark this special day, teams of scientists from all over the world traveled to Barrow and held the fourth polar conference called Polar Gateway's Arctic Circle Sunrise 2008. One of their main goals was to share information about the changes in the Earth's polar regions due to global climate change and how it will impact our daily lives and the future of our planet. Other topics included cutting-edge information about our sun's influence on the solar system, as well as our future exploration of other planets. During the next several podcasts, you will hear from some of the scientists who attended this conference. You will also hear from the residents of Barrow, who will share what it's like to live in such an icy world, where traditional marine mammal hunts and other subsistence practices are still an active part of the culture. During each podcast, make sure to visit the Sun Earth Day podcast page for related information and imagery. So let's get started by talking with the chairperson of the Polar Gateways Conference, Dr. John Cooper, from NASA Goddard Space Flight Center. The day before the polar sunrise, we were able to catch up with Dr. Cooper out on the tundra, where we could feel the deep chill of the Arctic air with temperatures around 5 degrees Fahrenheit. You'll certainly be able to hear the icy wind hitting his mic during our chat. We asked Dr. Cooper to tell us more about the conference and the science being discussed. We also wanted to know why they chose Barrow as the place to meet.
This conference really brings together scientists who are working in polar science of the Earth, as well as other planets, and the heliophysics people, which are dealing with the interactions of the sun and its energy, and with the planetary environments. So this is a joint heliophysics and International Polar Year conference. This conference was called Polar Gateway's Arctic Circle Sunrise, partly because we agreed that we would meet beginning on January 23rd of this year, 2008, because that is the first day of official sunrise at Barrow, Alaska. And of course, the closer you are to the pole, the later in the year you see sunrise because of the tilt of the Earth. And so this week that we are meeting, from tomorrow through the middle of next week, you know, is the first week of sunrise in this region of the Arctic. And so that is sort of a connection to heliophysics because of the connection of the sun to the Earth, you know, by meeting at this time. And then standing here in the Barrow environment, the sort of icy, cold environment, you know, is the icy worlds that we're interested in exploring, you know, and elsewhere in the solar system.
As I mentioned earlier, we interviewed Dr. Cooper on January 22nd, just one day before polar sunrise. It was also close to 2 p.m. Alaskan Standard Time, and although it looked as if the sun just might peak up over the southern horizon, it didn't quite make it. So we asked John to describe the scene and to give us a basic explanation for what was happening, or should I say wasn't happening. You can view an image of the exact scene John is describing on the Sun Earth Day podcast page.
Well, the sun is coming close to rising above the horizon, so you see a sort of red glow. We are actually past the time when it is highest in the sky, which means it's highest below the horizon. It hasn't quite risen above the horizon yet, and it will do that tomorrow on January 23rd. And so we should just see the sun itself poking above the horizon, and it will be above the horizon for about a half an hour or so, and that will be the first day of sunrise of this year in this location.
Towards the end of our interview, we switched gears and asked Dr. Cooper to give us a little bit of insight into how and why he became a space scientist.
Well, I became a scientist because, you know, I was born in 1950, and so I was going to school, sort of coming into age in elementary school at the time of the International Geophysical Year of 1957 to 58, and of course the launch of Sputnik in October 1957, and that was followed, of course, by the manned space program and the speeches, you know, the speeches of John Kennedy and the Apollo program to land on the moon, which we eventually did. So I grew up in the space age, and I had been very interested in that for a long time. My brother, who was 7 years older than I was, you know, had been very interested and had a lot of books, and so I would spend a lot of time, you know, reading his books about science, and so I was kind of inspired in that. My brother became a lawyer, actually, but I kind of, you know, kept my focus on science. I didn't actually plan originally to get into space science, but I got into physics from my undergraduate work, and then I went off and joined the Navy for a few years and came back to graduate school and was looking around for, you know, what kind of research I should be doing. And then I ended up joining a space science research group at the University of Chicago. And so that was how I ended up in space science. But, you know, I had always been interested in it from, you know, the early days of school, and just like everyone that was growing up in those days, the boomer generation.
I'd like to give a special thanks to Dr. Cooper for sharing his time with us. Later that afternoon, I had the pleasure to meet with the deputy director of the local Department of Wildlife Management, Harry Brower, Jr. Being a lifelong resident of Barrow, he was able to give us a peek into the cultural and scientific aspects of life in Barrow, the northernmost town in the United States.
I'm Harry Brower, Jr., seventh sibling of the nine children and from my parents, Harry and Annie Brower. I'm born and raised in Barrow, and I call myself a half-breed, even though I'm not quite half-breed. I know two different, my native language is the Inupiaq language, and I speak the English language because I was taught by my parents in the Western science, so to speak, to get the education that I need to be able to hold jobs in the community. I currently work for the Department of Wildlife Management with our local government, North Slope Board Department of Wildlife Management, as the deputy director. I didn't get into this position in a short period of time. It took me several years to get myself elevated to this position.
I've been walking around Barrow for a few days now, mm-hmm. and, limited. It's been kind of cold for me. But it's a very unique and incredible place, especially as I looked out over the ice and mm-hmm. and all of it. What is it that you love the most about this area and or this community?
Calling it home.
Calling it home.
Yes. I mean, wherever I travel, I want to come back home to Barrow. I travel pretty much all over the world. I've been to Japan, I've been to London, I've been to Australia, and everything else in between, and I want to come back home to Barrow and just start heading north.
What a place to call home.
Yes, it is. It's a very interesting place if you take the time and opportunity to meet and greet people and see how things progress here and the interaction of all the different cultures that occur at different times of the years, and science research happening. It's been going on for well over 50 years and maybe even more in terms of collecting specimens for different researchers from showing interest on Arctic animals.
And that's part of what you do, is when scientists and people come here to Barrow, you take them out.
Yes.
To do their research.
To conduct their research and collecting their specimens or samples of the different resources that they're interested in. There's so many different topics that we could talk about, and it couldn't happen in a short period of time, but, I mean, just from the research results that's been provided and shared with the community, it's been ongoing for many years.
That's incredible. Now, I have a question about let's say, 100 years ago, people made a living in one particular way. Mm-hmm. Do many people still make their living like they did 100 years ago, or has that really changed, or is there a mixture?
I have to indicate the latter one. There's a mixture in comparison of 100 years ago. even just from 20 years ago, it's a big change in terms of I mentioned earlier, the electricity, the gas, the natural gas that depend on, and all the vehicles that are around the community now. It's a big change. We've gone through this transition from motorized, from the dog team to the motorized.
That's right.
Yeah, into the jet era now. Now we're into this, what do they call these things, the computer and satellite.
That's right.
Technologies that, that we're currently dealing with. I mean, it's changed just from 10, 15, 20 years ago. And I mean, it's exciting times, but the thing is, the traditional practices continue. It was happening 100 years ago. It's being shared to us, with us, and being utilized today. That's because of the hunt of one specific marine mammal, is the bowhead whale. And the knowledge that has been shared with us is the teaching of the women braiding the thread from the caribou tendons. And then using that braided thread to sew the bearded seal skins to make the covering of the skin bone. I mean, that's something that was happening 100 years ago that's happening today.
And it's still going on today.
And it's still happening today.
And that's quite a responsibility of the people to maintain that aspect of the culture.
Oh, yes.
I can imagine.
Yes, it's, I mean, another one, it's the dancing and drumming of this traditional drums that are used for ceremonial or just community events, special events that occur.
I would love to.
That was happening 100 years ago. It's happening today.
We'd like to give a special thanks to Harry Brower Jr. for taking time to share the information that only a person with his experience could give. Sun Earth Day is a program sponsored by the NASA Sun Earth Connection Education Forum at the Goddard Space Flight Center and at the UC Berkeley Space Sciences Laboratory.
This is Troy Klein signing off.